Ooh, thanks for having me again. Well, good morning, everyone. This week was an interesting week for me, and I wonder how it was for you. So if you want to share anything at any time in the side, please do so. I am going to share with you a message that I have actually preached multiple times. It is something I come back to over and over again in my own life because of my own needs. And so I'm hoping it's a blessing to you all today. It's not exactly what I had planned. It's just kind of where God brought me once again. So I titled it, Self-Care is Soul Care, the Spiritual Disciplines of Self-Care and Rest. So a little bit about me. I know we're all getting to know each other still a little bit. So I have my description here. My story is a hardworking, high-achieving, weary, burdened mama. And I was not always these things, but what eventually led me to being weary was a lifetime of hard work and constant movement. Even at 8 years old, I was voted by my class as the hardest working in third grade. I was the hardest working kid in the class. And I didn't ever really know how to slow down. I don't think that was ever taught to me. It's not really valued in our culture. Slowing down is even if you hear talk about it, it's relatively new, the self-awareness that we have to slow down. And I just always lived as if I had to be moving all the time. I had to be doing and working. And I am an Enneagram 4 with a 3 wing. And if you know what that means, it means that 3 is sort of like my secondary type. And the 3 is the performer and the hard worker and the one who finds their value through doing. And our culture is a culture of doing and working hard. And we value that and we honor that. But it eventually led me to a place of burnout. One time when Tim and I had just gotten married, for example, we were moving from our apartment and I was packing and Tim was moving boxes into the truck and going back and forth between the truck and the apartment. And I was just, you know, constant moving. And all of a sudden Tim sat down on the couch and I was like, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm taking a break." And I was like, "You can't do that. Look at all the work we have to do." And he looked at me like I was the crazy one, which I realize now maybe I was. And he's like, "It's time for a break. You need to take a break." And that was so hard for me to grasp. Take a break? What does that mean? Why would I do that? There's so much that needs to be done. But I kept living that way. I kept living this hardworking, constant movement person until I was pregnant with Ben, my second born, and I was tired all the time. I was working. I had a 2-year-old at home. I was trying to take care of the house, and I kept trying to figure out why I couldn't do it all more efficiently, why it was so hard. I felt like I was doing something wrong, and that's why it was taking so much energy from me. And meanwhile, everyone was telling me to just stop. My husband, Tim, was telling me I needed to slow down. My best friend, Kimberly, was telling me to slow down. My mentor, my counselor, they all told me I had a lot on my plate. I needed to go easy on myself and I needed to take a break. But I couldn't hear it. I couldn't see it. I felt like there was a problem within me that was making it so difficult. Not that the way I was living was too much. Does that make sense? So it wasn't so much that I thought I'm doing too much. I thought I was doing the normal amount and the right amount. I thought I was the problem. And I was pushing so hard, working during nap time, clipping coupons, just constantly planning shopping trips, planning everything, working. Finally, when I was 6 months pregnant with Ben, I went on a private retreat by myself. Actually, I went to a hotel because I did not want to end up in some weird campsite, you know, private retreat center with a terrible bed. And during that time, God gave me that verse that I read before. Come to me, you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And over the course of that weekend, he began to shift my understanding of myself, my understanding of him, and invited me to a new way of living and a new kind of life. It's so much easier to just keep going and to work hard, because that is what is valued in our culture. That is what people like to see. If you are busy, people often tend to see you as important. There are accolades. There are, you know, people are excited for you. If work is busy, if your business is busy, well, that's good. That's good, right? But what is the end result of all that busyness? And what is the cost to us if we feel like we need to keep doing more in our relationship with God, in our relationship with one another, in work, in order to have value? In our culture, in the United States of America, we have the lowest number of vacation days attributed to us than any other country that's developed in the world. We are second behind Japan, excuse me, in the lowest number of vacation days. But 61% of Americans still work through their vacations because we have our emails on our phones and we can constantly be working with Wi-Fi. We work through our vacations. And because of this, the average employee works $504 worth every year for free because they don't take their vacation days and they don't roll over year to year, so they lose them. So as a culture, we are being taught not to stop. And our jobs are pushing us not to take the vacation time that is on our benefits and is given to us. And as a result, we are working for free. Oftentimes, we work through Sundays as well. We've lost Sunday as a day off. You know, everything's open. The grocery stores are open. Everything is still open. A lot of people have to work on Sundays. So we don't have that built-in time off into our lives. I was reading a book called Burnout, and it's by the Nagoski sisters, who wrote this amazing book on burnout and dealing with stress in our lives. And in this book, they quoted that we need 42% of our 24-hour day to be restful. So then we need 10 hours. That's 10 hours of our day needs to be devoted to our rest. It sounds like a lot, but if you consider that 8 hours, give or take an hour, would be sleeping, and 2 hours, and I have screen-free resting, it's really not that much. It's really not that much that we're taking, but we need this time. A neuroscientist, Dr. Leslie Sherlin, said, "The way we live our lives right now is like running a marathon." And in some ways, that's great, but you can't run marathons all that time. Keep that pace, she said, and at some point you will burn out. You may also suffer from weakened immune systems that lead to an increase of risk and diseases. Another doctor, Dr. Matthew Sleeth, wrote a book called 24/6, and it's all about, you know, taking the seventh day off. So he's not a Christian, but he values the six-day week. And he says, when we're constantly going, we pour out chemicals to try to meet our stresses. We have short-term stress hormones like adrenaline and long-term hormones like the steroids that we pour out. Those chemicals constantly being on are bad for us, and they lead to anxiety and depression and to possibly other diseases. He said, "I find that there's a growing epidemic really of depression. We're the most depressed country in the world." That leads me to my next slide. We do have a rise in mental illness in general in our culture. Typically, women struggle with higher rates of depression and anxiety than men. But overall, the U.S. has seen a 50% increase of rates of depression, anxiety, and thoughts of suicide in general over the last 10 years. At this point, 1 in 4 adults experience depression in some form in their lifetime. But more than that, 1 in 4 people, adults, experience mental illness every year. This was a stat that I learned from Amy Simpson, who wrote a book called Troubled Minds, and it's about mental illness in the church. 1 in 4 adults experience some form of mental illness every year. We have this culture of high expectations, individualism, emphasis on work and performance and overwork. And I think there's so many causes for mental illness. I'm not trying to say that all of this is a result of hard work, but when we have anxiety that is doubling over the course of a few years, like, this is a problem in our society. And unfortunately, I believe the church has bought into our culture's addiction to work, into business and success. We have churches that are modeled after CEOs. I don't think I need to tell you this. We measure our time with God. We have checklists for Bible readings as if it's another task to be done. And we feel guilty if we don't do our quiet time. I don't think the Mills is teaching this. This is just stuff I've seen in the church in general. We constantly feel like we need to do for God. And right now with the pandemic going on, there's a lot of stress. I'm going to get to my PowerPoint thing in a minute, but there's a lot of stress right now. If we don't recognize our need to deal with this stress, we're going to have even more further problems, I think, in this time. I just read a post this morning on Facebook, and it was a woman who was expressing her concern for this coming winter, because winters are hard for a lot of us. Moving back to Minnesota, I was kind of shocked at how the gray clouds would just last for a week after living in Colorado. And the seasonal affective disorder is a very real thing for a lot of us. This winter, we're going to be dealing with that, the normal flu season. We have an election coming up, which brings stress. We're already isolated, and I have a feeling we're going to have to deal with more lockdowns. And it's hard. This is so hard. In general, the Enneagram recognizes 3 responses to stress: anger, shame, and anxiety. And these are driven by those hormones that we have. They're driven by our brain movement, you know, our brain's neurons and all of that. But we can learn to control them. But if we don't begin to take a step back and take care of ourselves, these can kind of get out of control. For some people, anger looks like lashing out at people who have different beliefs, or lashing out if they feel like they've lost their autonomy, their power. It can look like resentment and passive-aggressive behavior, which these things break apart relationships and cause more stress. In fear, we have anxiety for loss of life. We have a lot of fear for our health. There's some people who fear for our freedom as more mandates are being set out. There's insecurity about finances as there's been job losses and setbacks. And then we have shame. And we don't think of shame as a stress response usually, but there's a lot of shame in our culture and shame about our performance. So we have a stigma over getting sick. We have a sense that we're not doing enough in order to prevent COVID from happening, and we shame others and feel discouraged and depressed. We need to recognize our need to grow and to change some of the ways we are living in our society, living as a culture, in order to not, I guess, fall apart on a regular basis. It happens every once in a while. I have a friend who did share with me the hashtag COVID cry the other day, and I just loved that. I mean, this is a very, very stressful time, and these stress responses are normal. They are normal. It is normal to be stressed by all of these things. But if we don't address the fact that we're dealing with the stress, we're going to have greater problems. So what do we change, and how do we change? I just laid out maybe what a lot of you have been feeling, and I'm sorry. I had my own breakdown on Wednesday, just thinking about school in the fall, and our neighbor possibly had COVID. He did not. It was negative. Just a lot of stresses, lots to balance. So what does God say? That's what where I always want to go. What is God's solution to dealing with these stresses? Last week, I mentioned one of my favorite Bible passages. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you today, just for time. It's the story of Elijah. It's the story when Elijah was chased by Jezebel and she was threatening his life. And the angel of the Lord came to him and took care of him, right? Well, I instead of me reading the chapter, I wanted to share this tweet. That's like one of my favorite things I've seen related to this passage. Joy Clarkson, she said, "This is your gentle reminder that one time in the Bible, Elijah was like, 'God, I am so mad. I want to die.' So God said, 'Here's some food. Why don't you have a nap?' So Elijah slept, ate, and decided things weren't so bad. Never underestimate the spiritual power of a nap and a snack." And that's kind of a cute little story that she told here, but it's so true. God recognized in Elijah that he needed his physical needs taken care of. He needed rest. He needed care for himself. And I had this question that was brewing in my mind this week, because this is one of my favorite stories as I consider my own stress, as I consider feelings in my own life of, I just want this all to be over with. I wondered to myself, is this just like a one-off story? Like one time God said, okay, you just need to take a break. Everyone else needs to keep going as normal. So I started to do some research on that. And I went all the way back to Genesis, because the story of Genesis is a story of creation, a story of how God has set the foundation of how we interact with him, of who he is, of who we are. And it says this: by the seventh day of creation, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. And in the Ten Commandments, the fourth commandment is we should also stop and rest just as God rested. In the Ten Commandments, all people were to stop working. Both the Israelites, the foreigners, employers and employees, animals, everybody had to stop working. But why? Why would we stop? Because God rested and made that day holy because on that day he rested. The rest is what made the day holy. Do you see that? He didn't make it holy just in and of itself. He made it holy because of the rest that happened on that day. The act of resting is holy. People often say, well, actually not people, Jesus later said, God didn't give us the Sabbath so that we would be slaves to the Sabbath. He gave us the Sabbath because we need the Sabbath. We need to stop. The root of the word Sabbath is just stop, stop working, because we need that break. I'll go into this a little bit more in a little bit. But when we do stop working, we are honoring that we are not God, that we cannot keep going indefinitely. We need this rest. And unfortunately, we either don't rest or we create massive rules around the Sabbath. And this is like throughout history. That's not necessarily us today. Today, I find that people just dismiss it altogether. That is just not a thing. I've even heard someone say that in the New Testament, the Sabbath day is the one commandment that is not reaffirmed. But I think that's nuts, especially given that Jesus said Sabbath was made for people. Sabbath was made for us. And at the time when Jesus was teaching that, there were, of course, the Pharisees, and you know about them. They made rest into work. I just wanted to share some funny things with you that they did regarding Sabbath. I mean, I think they're funny now, but just imagine the burden that this would have been back then. They had so many rules and regulations around Sabbath in order to maintain power, in order to have people, you know, trying to please God. There were so many reasons for doing this. So one of the things that they did was they distinguished between wearing something and carrying something. So they had to decide, for example, if like a woman's hair clip or hair binder was worn or if she was carrying it. If she is carrying it, then it's a burden and forbidden on the Sabbath. Wearing jewelry was considered a burden on the Sabbath. People could not look in a mirror lest they be tempted to remove a gray hair and thus reap. It was unlawful to move any furniture on the Sabbath. There was an exception in that you were allowed to move a ladder on the Sabbath, but you could only move it 4 steps. So you could walk with it for 4 steps. It was not permitted to wear false teeth on the Sabbath, so you couldn't have dentures on the Sabbath. If something needed to be carried down the street, they could carry it a certain number of steps, probably like 4 or 5 steps, stop, then they have to put it down, pick it up again, and then carry it a few more steps, stop, put it down. I mean, just insane. So these rules and regulations around practices that God gave for us became burdens. And really, the entire law became burdens for the people. And this is what Jesus came against. And so it's in this culture that Jesus steps in and he says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." The yoke of the Pharisees was one that continued to weigh the people down as they put more and more rules and burdens and made it more difficult to follow God. And Jesus said, "Do away with all of that. Follow me. Take my yoke and rest." So why don't we? Let's honestly take a look. Why don't we stop and rest? I mean, I've already mentioned it. It's totally countercultural. We don't get ahead. We feel like we're not going to. Sorry, let me just go back to that. We think, and the story we tell ourselves is, we're not going to be doing enough if we stop and if we rest. We're not going to earn enough money. We're not going to get ahead. We're not going to be productive. We're not going to, you know, be the best. And these things are all stressed by the culture. We don't see this as a way to have communion with God, others, and ourselves. We feel like our pride is pushing against this desire for rest because resting pushes against the pressure to be perfect and to perform. So our pride gets in the way and we think we can do it all. We should be able to do it all. I really took on that one. We have fear of falling behind financially, falling behind the others. And there's a false guilt for stopping. I think there's a real guilt for, I should be doing more. I can't stop. Other people are working. Why am I not working right now? And we've been trained that this is all selfish. We've been trained it is selfish. However, self-care and rest and other forms of self-care where we really pay attention to our bodies is a spiritual practice. I don't have the notes written down for this, but I think this is important and I just want to say it. We have bought into this dichotomy that we are spirit and body, that that our bodies are totally separated from our spirits, and therefore we can just continue to grow spiritually and grow emotionally and grow with God and totally ignore our bodies. But God created us with bodies, and our bodies carry the burdens that our spirits are giving them. There's a book called The Body Keeps the Score, and it talks about the results of trauma on the body. It talks about the ways that we, if we keep ignoring our bodies, we're going to just continue to impact and live in our trauma over and over again. So what does it look like to have self-care as a spiritual practice when we're really taking into consideration our needs holistically? And I just want to say one thing about spiritual practices. So often they've been taught to us as like, this is how you be a good Christian. This is what we need to do in order to be good. That is not what they are for. These are activities that open us up to God and bring us to a place where transformation can happen by the power of the Holy Spirit. I want to say that again. Spiritual practices are activities that open us up to God and bring us to a place where transformation can happen by the power of the Holy Spirit. So one of my favorite books, I do have it right next to me. I thought I didn't. Is this book, Spiritual Disciplines Handbook by Adele Alberg Calhoun. And I'm going to be quoting this quite a bit as we go through some practices that are helpful. And definition of self-care as spiritual discipline. She says that as we practice self-care, we intentionally receive ourselves as God's own beloved. Receiving this love into our bodies births the ability to give love and forgiveness to ourselves and to others. Self-care honors God through nurturing and protecting the body, mind, and spirit with their limits and desires. So as we practice self-care, we learn to receive the love that God offers to us as we, you know, actually love ourselves through these acts of self-care. So I have a few options for you. Oh, I forgot. Well, no, I'm just going to skip this slide. I have a few options for you. I have this note here. Pick one or two. Okay. So easy to say, oh, I'm going to do that. And then pretty soon we're overworking ourselves by resting so hard. So I just desire you to receive this as an invitation to listen to what you need. And this is another thing that Calhoun says. She says that God gives us desires, you know, that through listening to our desires, we are listening to the Holy Spirit. We are hearing God's invitation to us. So if this is ringing true to you, here are some ideas of practices that you could use, and do not try to do all of them. Okay. Just like one or two. What are one or two things that you could do to practice this self-care? So the first one I already mentioned, it is the Sabbath. Calhoun said, Sabbath is God's gift of repetitive and regular rest. It is given for our delight and communion with God. Time for being in the midst of a life of doing particularly characterizes the Sabbath. And like I said before, the Sabbath, the root of the word Sabbath is stop. So it just literally means stop. Stop doing what you're doing. This can be any day of the week. It does not have to be Sunday. Some people do Sabbath rhythms of 6 hours to 1 hour. So they'll like work for 6 hours, take a 1 hour break, work for 6 hours, take a 1 hour break, like do that kind of a rhythm. It's any type of 6-to-1 rhythm where you are practicing stopping. Leviticus, when it describes this commandment to honor the Sabbath and keep it holy, it says you must not do any work at all. So basically, you can do what you want to do. Just don't work. So what is work for you? Laundry, on like a day off that you have? What might you keep be doing? Like laundry, dishes, cleaning? What would it look like to let that go? To let your phone and emails go? What would it look like for you to have a day off every week? Now, for me, there are certain things that have to be done. I have to feed my kids, for example. I don't like cooking, so I keep it as simple as possible. My mom used to have Sundays be kind of her day off from cooking. We would, you know, basically have a basic breakfast. We would go out for lunch, and we'd have cereal for dinner on Sundays. That was every week. And like, that was just normal. Like, I see that as the norm. Like, cereal is absolutely a decent dinner on a Sunday evening to me. What would it look like for you to take a break, to stop working on the Sabbath day? And I guess as you're going here, I would love to hear your comments as you think of things that could work for you. So please shout them out and what you've done in the past. Sabbath has been really helpful for me. It's something I come back to time and time again. It's not always the case, but I feel like it always brings me back to the Sabbath. Next is just rhythms of rest. So entering into rest depends on honoring our God-given limitations or limits. By paying attention to the physical, mental, and spiritual needs of the body, we learn when and how to rest. So our rest can be any number of things. It can be going to bed on time, adding it into your schedule. It's taking those vacation days, taking sick days. It means stopping work at a set time each day. We need to schedule in what then revives us. That could be reading. It can be exercise. I have exercise highlighted because actually I'm learning more and more how exercise is a way to get rid of stresses and bring rest into our life. And I'm not, let's just say, I don't like exercising so much. Scheduling in coffee with someone. We can do that right now, even like from a distance outside. Pretty soon it's going to be a lot harder when it gets colder. What would it look like? We maybe need to be creative in our connections around rest. Let's see. Some people are making comments. Donette, my not working is reading, poking around my yard, and napping. Thank you for that. Poking around your yard. I love that picture. I love napping too. Yes, I know some people really struggle with napping. What would it look like even just to lie down and rest and away from your screens? Because screen time has been shown more and more to be actually stressful and not productive. Michelle, I'm with you on the exercise. Why is it so hard, Michelle? I know. Oh, I've been walking past your house. I have started walking as my form of exercise because I enjoy walking and my dog needs to go on walks. And I've been walking past the Bergie's house and I keep meaning to like knock someday. Anyway. All right. So the next part, take care of your physical health. Self-care does not have to be a glamorous, hey, I'm going to the spa. I'm going to a getaway. I'm going on vacation. Self-care can simply be going to your appointments. We could have your physical appointments, like your physical doctor's appointments, dental visits, chiropractor, whoever, whatever you need to see, take care of your body. Again, the exercise again, we need to get stress out of our bodies in some way because our bodies hang on to that stress so tight. If we exercise, it actually gets rid of the stress and completes the stress cycle. If we eat right, whatever that looks like for you, getting enough sleep, these are all ways to take care of your body. And again, I said getting the stress out of your body can also be making sure you're laughing on a regular basis, connecting with someone else, deep breathing in times of meditation and creativity. All of those things are ways to get stress out of our body because otherwise it just lives in our body. Let's see who else said some things. Stringing up a hammock is not working for me. Oh, is not work. Greg, that's great. Stringing up a hammock is not work for me. I would love a hammock. That sounds awesome. Stop, Michelle. I will come by next time. Please tell me you had fruity pebbles for Sunday dinners. Jason, you know, I didn't really like fruity pebbles, but I did like Lucky Charms and Cinnamon Toast Crunch and all of the sugary cereals. So we did have that. Okay, self-care can also look like talking to someone and taking care of our emotional health and spiritual growth as well. Seeing a therapist or a counselor, there are so many options for online counseling and online coaching, online, you know, spiritual direction. You can even just confiding in someone, in a close friend or a pastor, confidant is helpful. And I have be vulnerable here, be vulnerable. And I'm thinking of Brené Brown's teaching on when we're vulnerable, then we experience the truest connection. And then we experience, authenticity and connection. And it is the most healing for us in the deepest ways. So being vulnerable is scary, but it brings about the greatest healing to us. And finally, I have practiced self-compassion here. Now, this isn't necessarily talking to someone, but self-compassion is offering ourselves the empathy and you know, love that we would offer someone else. So exhaustion happens when we get stuck in an emotion. That's from the book Burnout I mentioned before. An empathetic exhaustion happens caring for too much for too long. So caring about certain things in our lives will lead to empathetic exhaustion. So some of us might be experiencing exhaustion over caring about the pandemic rules and guidelines. Some of us may be feeling empathetic exhaustion after being caregivers for someone else. We need to be working through all of these things on a regular basis. And this is self-care as well. And again, as we're doing this, we can also open ourselves up to God and hear, God, what are you telling me? What are you saying to me about myself in this time? Because as we learn about ourselves, as we practice self-care and showing and talking to ourselves kindly and care for our emotional selves, we become more aware of those triggers that bring us to that stress place quicker. We become more aware of the wounds that need to be healed as we connect with God and others. As we become much more aware of the healing that we need in our lives. And God meets us there because He desires that healing and growth for us too. So these are very, very much spiritual practices, in my opinion. And finally, I do have unplugging. Sarah Land, I saw your comment. Getting off of screens is a tricky thing for us and our family. I hear you 500%. A big trigger for my meltdown on Wednesday evening was the fact that I just felt like I couldn't get a hold on my kids' screen time. I couldn't get a hold on what I felt like was a really bad habit for them. And I just felt like I was like losing this battle. And this is hard. Unplugging calls us to leave the virtual world of technology in order to become present to God and others and ourselves, I would add. Screens have been shown to actually add stress, especially as we have our social media that is just constantly becoming more and more aggressive and there's just more anger. Like our stress is all out on social media, right? We are exposed to so many different opinions than we did. We are exposed to so many different problems. We see the news, this 24/7 news cycle that brings up the negative things that are happening in this world. This is just added stress. And on top of that, you have the blue lights that actually awaken parts of our brain and cause that stress to be on all the time too. It's actually been proven that too much screen time leads to insomnia. We have the loud noises that are overstimulating on our televisions, bright lights from flashing lights if we're watching movies and things like that. We've got high energy commercials. I mean, if anybody has Hulu, their commercials are 2 times louder than the actual television show, it seems like. I swear, it's exhausting. So what could unplugging look like? I'm seeing the moms over here empathizing with my meltdown. And Sarah, Michelle, thank you for that. That meltdown over a screen battle with kiddos is real. You are not alone. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, I saw Jim Gaffigan actually has a lockbox where they lock up the screens. Like, they actually have like a chest that all of them go into with a charging station, and it's just they can't access them. And I'm like, I need that. But for myself, as a spiritual practice, there are so many things that can be done. Social media fast, like getting away from social media. And you don't have to announce it to the world. The reality is people go on them all the time, and people will find you if they need you. Taking a break from your cell phone or scheduling in cell phone breaks, like after 7 p.m., the cell phone goes away. There's a note here that I have that it says, those constantly accessible via cell phones were the most likely to report mental health issues in a study that was shown that people who are constantly on their cell phone and constantly reachable are most likely to be dealing with anxiety and stress. Regular late night computer use is associated with sleep disorders, stress, and depressive symptoms in both men and women. And really, if we're on our phones all the time, it allows us to escape some stress, but we're not actually dealing with it. It just gets numbed, and it doesn't get out of our body. It doesn't move anywhere, and it's not taken care of. So if we're constantly on our screens, we might feel a little bit better while we're on them. But this frequent use without breaks from them increases our stress. And it increases our disconnection from each other and from God. So what would it look like to figure out unplugging? Keeping your phone out of your bedroom at night, keeping your TV out of your bedroom. You know, what would that look like for you? There's so many things that can be done. It's just difficult because we're all addicted. We all are. So grace on us all. All right. Okay, so my story today. All right, so what am I trying to share with you for today? I am still on this journey. I think it'll be my journey for the rest of my life, because we are all struggling to fight against this culture that is like an Enneagram 3 culture. It is all about performance. It is all about work. It is all about doing more. And God is constantly inviting us to a different way of living, a new kind of life. After Ben was born, and really, I think it was right after Ben was born, I took time for like a major reset in my life. So this was after I went on that spiritual retreat. When I went on my maternity leave, I was on staff at a church. I was awesome. I had a 3-month maternity leave. I didn't go to church for 3 months, even though I was working there. I didn't have people over. I'm an introvert, and I knew I needed that time. I learned more about myself as a highly sensitive person, and that's a thing. That's not a bad thing. It's just a thing. Rest has become a regular part of my routine. And I try to take, you know, a day off every week, whenever I can. Practicing self-care has completely altered the way I view my relationship with God. No longer is it about checking a box that I get something done for him, but my time with God is 100% focused on my relationship with him. So if I do set aside, like this is, I'm going to journal and pray and read. Like if I take that time, I don't feel like I have to get it done. It's about being with him. Practicing self-care has led to a greater sense of trust that, you know, he is God and I am not. I don't have to take care of everything. It has given me a greater sense of trust that he is going to take care of me, as over the years he has shown up. And just because I didn't work one day didn't mean I didn't get everything done. I have learned that there is more time than I think there is, that actually when I do stop, I am more productive, which is something that I do value. But like, I don't have to be constantly producing, if that makes sense. I have learned that God is with me at all times and not just, you know, a 20-minute practice here and there, as I have rhythms of rest through my life. And I still have work to do. I still need to be careful that I am not overdoing it, which leads to those meltdowns. I need to recognize quicker when I am draining my sources, you know, what's the word? Like when I have, you know, my source of energy and that's slowly draining, like I need to recognize that quicker and schedule things differently. But that's the work I need to do. What would it look like for you? What does it look like in your life? What do you need? That's my question to you today. As we go throughout the rest of the service, like please share with one another. I love the conversations that are happening on the side. We all have, you know, a culture that we're fighting against, and it is possible to rise against these things. I believe it is possible for us to join together as a community to care for ourselves and to care for one another in this upcoming winter that is going to be so difficult on so many ways. And that's something I'm looking forward to trying to figure out together, is how can we as a church family grow together and grow in caring for one another, feeding one another with those long spoons. Remember that from last week? Taking care of each other's needs. What can we do? So that's something that I think ongoing I would love to have as a conversation. So I just would love to pray right now. And then David, if you can come back in for the communion. But Lord God, I just thank you that you invite us into stress, that you know that we are finite individuals, that you know that that you made us out of dust. And there's that verse that says, he knows we are dust. And I go back to that so much, Lord, because I am constantly trying to find my value in my work. And you know me better than I know myself. You know the anxious ways within me. And you are so gracious. So Lord, I pray that we would become a group that can break free from the trappings of overwork, exhaustion, that we can break free from our stress, be further connected with you, so that we have, you know, we are with your yoke, which is easy and light, Lord.